This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And happy Monday, Meghna.
Happy Monday to you, Anthony.
And happy Monday to all of you listening out there.
Here's a question for you. Are you having a happy Monday? If not, you're far from alone, because for many, happy Monday sounds like an oxymoron. After all, it's the start of another 5 days of work where more than 50% of Americans say they are unhappy.
Low pay, poor leadership, annoying coworkers, tight deadlines, and shrinking resources are just some of the problems many confront in the workplace.
So, is there a way to find joy and satisfaction in a place where we spend the majority of our time? The office.
Well, Lodro Rinzler, who's been called the cool kids Buddhist, set out to answer that question in his new book. Rinzler is a Buddhist teacher and the former executive director of the Boston Shambhala Center and founder of the Institute for Compassionate Leadership. He writes frequently about Buddhist meditation, how it can be applied to modern life, even to things like drinking and sex. He's author of Walk Like a Buddha and The Buddha Walks Into a Bar. His latest book is called The Buddha Walks Into the Office, A Guide to Livelihood for a New Generation. He'll be at the Brookline Booksmith tonight, and he joins us right now to talk about how Buddhist teachings can make for a better workplace. And Lodro Rinzler, welcome to Radio Boston. It's good to meet you.
Thank you both so much for having me. It's really wonderful to be here in Boston with you.
So, listeners, bosses, employees, we want to hear from you. Have you considered bringing mindfulness and meditation to your workplace? Do you start your workday with a set intention? What Buddhist teachings do you think could help make your office more Zen? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Lodro, I just love to read. I love the way you begin this preface because it's such sort of down-to-earth language. Sometimes at work, people are jerks. Sometimes you are one of them. This book is about how not to be a jerk, which in retrospect might have been a better title, and how to work with others in your office so that mindfulness and empathy can flourish. It's a good beginning. So tell us sort of where this sort of Buddhist journey meets the workplace.
Yeah, you know, the book actually has two main things going on. One is, you know, I'm younger. I'm 31, and I found that when people that come to my talks, they're often leaving college and they don't know exactly what they're going to do for a career. So part of this is, you know, they want to say, I want to help the world. I'm not sure exactly what I want to do. And meditation can help us get specific about that. So we actually, one of the Tibetan words for meditation is gom, G-O-M. And it's more directly translated as become familiar with. So we're actually becoming more familiar with what's going on in our own mind. And that's helpful both for finding out what we want to do for our livelihood, but also who we want to be, how we want to manifest on a day-to-day level at work.
Yeah.
And that's really where I think a lot of people are starting to discover meditation is helpful.
You actually wrote about this. It was in Huffington Post, but I know it was taken from this book, this idea that a lot of times, you know, we grow up thinking, what do I want to do when I grow up? Mm-hmm. And a lot of us go on asking that question well into our 30s, 40s, 50s, who knows? But you say there's a better question to ask than what do we want to do when we grow up?
That's exactly it. And I want to preface this by saying I don't think at a certain point we're done and we say, oh, now I'm a grown-up, right? I think we always think that we're growing up.
Yeah.
But the question is, who do we want to be?
Yeah.
And meditation helps us discover the qualities that we want to cultivate. And as you said, we can set an intention in the morning and try and be present enough to live within that lines of the intention throughout our day and then reflect at the end of the night and see, am I actually being who I want to be in the office?
So what does that mean? I mean, how do we go about, how does your practice help us go about really figuring out who we want to be?
You know, as I said, part of this is just becoming familiar with who we are, but part of it's just slowing down, because if you are like me, you're constantly surrounded by speed, aggression, mm-hmm. we've got to get things done.
Right.
So it's saying, I'm just going to slow down. It's very countercultural in some sense, that we're just going to be present enough to see a situation clearly and then respond skillfully as a result. And that actually, when you start to do that, I think other people in the office start to notice as well, and they start to pick up, and it can actually, I've heard people come through the book and they've said, this is changing the culture in my office where I'm starting to slow down. I'm starting to be more present. I'm starting to cultivate kindness, compassion. And then people are opening up in response in different ways than they were in the past.
But do you find that there's sort of, or, you know, respond to the idea? I can imagine a lot of people listening out there and sort of saying, this is all well and good in theory. But when I come into work and, you know, the stuff really hits the fan, talk about slowing down and this, that, and the other, it just isn't realistic. You know, it's 2:49 and our show's on the air in 11 minutes and we got to run. We got to get this done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I understand. But, you know, I bet for everyone that's saying that in their office, there's probably someone else in that office saying the exact same thing. So the question becomes, if we don't do it, who will?
Right.
You know, this is the story of the Buddha, right? This is one guy who sat down, meditated, become more awake as a result, and then was able to change his society. So you could think of our work as a society. We go in every day and we can have an impact in one way or another. We either buy into the speed and aggression that's surrounding us, or we just choose to go in a very different manner and see if people can meet us there.
Yeah. And you suggest using this thing called a mandala to help figure out what you want to do for a career, right?
Yeah.
So tell us how that process works.
Well, this is one of many contemplations that are offered in the Buddha Walks into the Office. And this is also an exercise we do. You mentioned that I run something called the Institute for Compassionate Leadership, mm-hmm. which is the nonprofit that I run, where it's a 6-month part-time training program for these sorts of people that say, I want to help the world. I'm not exactly sure what I want to do. And we put them through an exercise where you start to say, what do I want to base my life around? Do I want it to be I'm going to be the CMO of Starbucks and base my life around that? And, you know, all of my aspirations and my day-to-day revolves around that goal? Or do I say, I want to be a kind person? Mm. Oh, I want to be a generous person. And then if we build our life around that sort of quality that we want to cultivate, there's a much greater chance for happiness than if we say, I need to be this specific job title.
Sure.
Because that's very hard. There's billions of people on the earth. There's only one CMO of Starbucks. But there's a lot of opportunities to be kind, a lot of opportunities to be generous, and our career can be built around that.
So the book sort of includes some how-to strategies. So how mm-hmm. do we, you know, give us a kind of working exercise for this this idea of contemplating this mandala?
Sure. So I mentioned just a minute ago that one thing I like to encourage people to do is right when they wake up to set an intention. You know, if I'm saying I'm meeting with a lot of people today, my intention might be I'm going to be very present with all of them. If I'm doing more volunteer work, I might say, I'm going to be very generous with my time and my energy and maybe my money. Whatever it is, you sort of gear it toward your day. And then you set reminders. You could set a reminder on your phone. You could put a post-it on your computer. You could, you know, write it somewhere that you'll see it regularly. And then at the end of the day, you reflect back and you say, how much did I actually live in line with that intention? How much did I manifest as who I want to be today?
Yeah. And what do you hear? I mean, for people who really embrace that and take that into the workplace, what do you hear from them? Does their life change in meaningful ways?
I do. And I hear that they are happier at work because they're not basing their idea of success around, I need to accomplish X, Y, and Z, because right after you accomplish that, there's always more things to do. They're basing their idea of success around manifesting a life that they feel is good for them and of benefit to others.
You know, one of the challenges, I think, is that we often think about what we do when we go to work as sort of separate from everything else we're doing in life or everything else we want to do in life. And it seems like you're advocating bringing the whole kind of kit and caboodle together. I mean, life, love, in work, out of work, whatever it is, sort of apply the same energy to that.
You're spot on, Anthony. It's really, people say, okay, I'm going to break my spiritual life, my meditation practice, my religious beliefs over here. I'm going to put my work over here. And this is saying we've got to bring them together so that we can actually live our 9-to-5, our work day, as a spiritual practice.
Yeah. Listeners, we're talking to Lodro Rinzler. He's a teacher in the Shambhala Buddhist lineage. He's the founder of the Institute for Compassionate Leadership, and he's author of The Buddha Walks into the Office, A Guide to Livelihood for a New Generation. We invite you to join this conversation, whether you're a boss, an employee. We want to hear from you. Have you considered bringing mindfulness, meditation to your workplace? What do you think? Do you have a question for Lodro Rinzler about this sort of thing? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter and at Radio Boston. You also, I want to ask you about these 5 slogans in the book for changing how you view work. Can we tick through them? What are they?
Okay. So we've got each of these sections has 5 different slogans that are known as mind training or Lojong slogans that were developed by this gentleman, Atisha, many centuries ago, but are still very relevant today. So we've got things like, if you can practice even when distracted, you are well trained. And that's great. And I think the level of distraction was probably very different when you were living in a monastery in the 800s. But how many distractions do we have today?
Hmm.
Right?
I mean, endless.
Right now, endless. If you are at your desk right now listening to this, I bet you have 5 tabs open on your computer, right?
Right,
and you're like half listening to me and you're half on Facebook. And if the idea is, can we actually get one-pointed with our work and just become fully present? So we talk about mindfulness. It's such a catchphrase these days. Hmm. Mindfulness is saying you're going to be fully mindful of something. Mindful of my eating, mindful of my work, mindful of a conversation I'm having right now with you. So it's bringing our full self to something. So if you can do that, even when there's so many distractions, that's when you know your meditation practice is working. That's just one of many.
All right. I want to ask you, too, about, and this is something that's sort of near and dear to us in the world of sort of news and journalism and deadlines, and that is working with deadlines. A lot of people have to work with deadlines, and it can just seem impossible to be mindful with a deadline bearing down on you. What's the response there?
Well, you know, I think for many of us, we give in to the habitual momentum, you could say, of work. And it's like, if I know I have to do something by 5, I put all of my energy into it and I start neglecting my own self-care. Mm-hmm. I start tuning out all of my environmental cues. I'm just one-pointed. And then my work isn't as good as a result.
Yeah.
One of the things I often recommend for people who are really on intense deadlines is to do something, once again, a little countercultural. You set a timer on your phone. Every hour, when that timer goes off, you just lift your gaze a little bit. And if you're at home right now, you could do that. And just take a breath, reconnect to your body, and just rest your mind. Raise your gaze, rest your mind for about 30 seconds, a minute, and then come back to your work. So you actually take a fresh start point of view, and that's when creativity actually starts to seep in.
Hmm. So I think one of the things that I do, I don't think it's particularly Buddhist, is I'm sort of a physically nervous guy. I need to move a lot. So if I'm really focused on something, I get up and walk around the office. I don't really have any purpose in that walk other than just to sort of do what you said, lift my head and breathe and reconnect with myself. Sounds like it's along those lines.
It is, yeah. I mean, once again, so much of what we're talking about here is taking care of yourself so that you can take care of others and take care of the work that needs to be done. So, you know, it's not necessarily meditation that you're doing, but you're in that general umbrella of, I'm going to drink a lot of water. I'm going to take a walk. I'm going to stretch my legs. And it's actually, there's these very ancient teachings from Tibet known as the 4 exhilarations, which I will share. And people make a big deal. Oh, they came out of the caves of Tibet so many centuries ago. And it comes down to, can you eat well in a day? Do you get enough sleep? Do you meditate? And do you exercise? And if you can do all 4 of those things in a day, you're taking care of yourself. You have a lot more energy than you would normally in the office.
Eat well, sleep well, meditate. What was the 4th?
Exercise.
Exercise,
and it
course.
Really can be as simple as going for a long walk, like you were saying.
All right. Well, let's take some calls, and we've got some calls from the working world. John is calling from Roslindale. Hi, John. You're on the air with Lodro Rinsler.
Hey, guys. Thanks. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm a fairly mindful person. I try to be present. I try to stay with it, and I meditate pretty often. But I work in an ER. I work in a hospital setting where it's like definitely high-paced, very, like, micromanaging little crises is part of what we do every day. How do you stay mindful in that kind of setting? How do you stay mindful and present and kind when you're faced with all these challenges?
John, it's a great question. And I just to be absolutely clear for our listeners, he works, Lodro, in an ER, in an emergency room. So you can imagine the kind of pressure he's dealing with.
Yeah, John, that's a great question. And there's a chapter in here about a friend of mine, Marina, who's a nurse, and she also worked in the ER for a number of years, and now she's in private practice. But I asked her at one point, I said, how are you able to do what you do? And she says, I just show up and I do it. And I imagine that might be your experience too, John, that you just, at a certain point, you're well-trained, you're present because you've been meditating regularly, and then you're able to manifest in a way that might be more clear if you hadn't been meditating when you're not at work. And there's some aspect here of just do it. And it's such an interesting thing because this was adopted by Nike, right? Like, you know, it means let's get quicker, let's get speedier. And here, just do it is just show up for whatever is right in front of you. So there's, as we were talking about before, a one-pointed quality to bringing out the meditation practice at work. It's just actually showing up when you're with that patient, being fully with that patient and their family and hearing their concerns, and then going right to the room next door and being fully present with whoever's there. easier said than done, and I'm sure that's been your experience, that it is easier said than done. But if you have a strong meditation practice, you can practice even when distracted. So I wish you luck, John. It's certainly, and thank you for doing the work that you do.
Indeed, John. Thanks for the call. Lodru, I'm just wondering how important it is to have, I mean, if you really want to take this to the point of it making a difference and changing the way you feel and exist around your workplace, do you need buy-in from your coworkers, from your supervisors? Or is this, you know, to create a culture that really embraces these values?
You know, it's so often people say, you know, I want to practice meditation at work and I want to make it. More often than not, you need to show, not tell. Like, you don't need to, like, let everyone know that you've been meditating. It's the fact that you start showing up and you're really there with people. You're showing up for work in a way that you may not have before, and they pick up on that, and that sort of creates a different culture. I don't think you need to go in and, like, warn everyone that you've started this weird Buddhist thing. you know, it's probably better that you don't. It's better that you just manifest the practice without having to say a lot about it.
All right, let's go to Bob, who's calling from Waltham. Hi, Bob, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Very well. What's on your mind, Bob?
Well, I'm really enjoying this conversation. As someone that works in computer science, we have a state that we get into that we call programming Zen, where you just get out of your own way and sort of just become one with the program you're writing. And it's like you can do no wrong, and time passes without you even noticing. You start coding, it's 2 o'clock, you look up, it's 7 o'clock, you've got the whole program done, it compiles perfectly on the first time. And you know, your speaker's been talking about being one-pointed. It's like being the ultimate one-point, because it's like you become one with the code.
Hmm.
Like the term grok is what we use.
Bob, it's a great call. So, Lodro, what do you hear in Bob's comment there? It sounds like, yeah, he's one with the code. He sounds like he's completely immersed in his work, and that his work has become sort of his meditation.
And that's great. That's well put. You know, Bob, I hear you on that. And this is not the first time I've heard that. There's so many of us that spend our work time thinking about what's going to happen, or what used to happen, or what should happen, or, you know, all of these sorts of things. It's pretty rare that people just show up and they're, as you said, sort of one with their work. And it's great. You know, there's a term that's introduced in The Buddha Walks Into the Office, which is prajna, which is superior knowledge. And what that means is it's actually, as you said, us getting out of our own way. So it's not, here's what I think to happen, and my opinions are better than everyone else's opinions. It's, I'm resting within the moment enough to see a situation clearly, and as a result, I know how to respond, and I know what the next step is. And I think that's what you're getting at. That's great.
Bob, thanks so much for the call. Let's move on. Let's go to Maureen, who's calling from Newton. Hi, Maureen, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. Hi, so I worked as a chemist, and I just found it very difficult to do the meditation while I was working. But the one thing that really sticked, I would do walking meditation every time I would go to the restroom or, like, walk to lunch. And it really made me take a break and have a rest, and it was neat.
And Maureen, tell me what goes on when you do those walking meditations, because, you know, my first response to you is, oh, a woman after my own heart. I'm always walking and pacing around. I'm not sure that I'm meditating. But what goes on when you're taking those walking meditations?
Right. Specifically when I would walk to the bathroom. So I would definitely do those little breaks where I walk around and just think. But walking meditation is just like, okay, I'm trying to be fully present with how it feels to walk.
Hmm.
And if I'm breathing while I'm walking, which, you know, it would be nice to know if that was happening.
Yeah. I mean, I laugh, but this idea of making sure you're breathing is actually pretty profound, and I think it's something we forget all the time.
Yeah, you know, Maureen, for me, it was more years than I care to admit that it took me more years than I to actually realize that meditation is not a mental exercise. It's actually a physical thing. You actually sink into your body. And more often than not, we get very lost in our heads. So to sink into the body, to actually reconnect and be present for something as simple as walking, how revolutionary. So you will certainly get a positive reaction from me. You get it's a chemistry joke.
I got it. Now that you explained it,
right.
Really got it.
I had to.
Maureen, thank you so much. Yeah. Lodro, you also write about learning to be fearless. So why do people need to be fearless at work, and how can Buddhist teachings instill that fearlessness?
You know, I think it's such an interesting time, particularly when I started writing this thing. we are in the midst of the economic recession. I suppose we're slowly climbing out of it, but there's still a lot of fear in the workplace. People are scared of what their boss might think. They're scared of losing their job, all sorts of things. And the idea of fearlessness in this particular context is not being without fear. It's actually looking directly at our fear, looking directly at our emotions, and as a result, seeing our way through them. So it's not like, oh, I shouldn't feel fear. It's actually tips for how to be brave and how to actually manifest a sense of presence in the office.
Let's take another call. Irene is calling from Bedford. Irene, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi there. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a teacher of transcendental meditation, and so I just want to say that works for me for a job. But also, I just want to say I agree with what your guest is saying about meditation and all that, or about mindfulness, what he's describing as mindfulness. But we would describe it a little bit differently in terms of what happens when you go to work. If you're in a very fast-paced environment or you have a lot of responsibility, basically the experience of meditation is an experience. And then when you come out, and so that would be the time when you slow down, and actually your body actually does slow down, and there's research that shows all your heart rate and breath rate and everything slow down. And then your mind rests and also gets very enlivened and expanded. And then you come out and go into dynamic activity, and you can speed up and you can go really fast. And it's not something you have to think about or try to maintain or anything like that. It's just with you very automatically. And actually, you can't lose it. Once you do it, you've got the benefit of that, and you just bring it with you in terms of whatever you do.
All right, Irene, thanks. Lodro, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, thank you, Irene, and that's great. It's lovely to hear another perspective. Obviously, transcendental meditation, Buddhist meditation, both types of meditation, but very different. And yet the common denominator there is completely spot on, which is the more we do it, the more it actually sinks into our bones. And it's a little bit, you know, we're in the studio here. We've got a guitar. If you pick up a guitar 10 minutes a day, you start to play around with it. You start to learn it. You can get really good. All of a sudden, you're in a garage band, right? But if you pick it up 10 minutes once and then you put it down, you're not going to really learn it. So it's that sense of playing with it and having that level of joy as you play around with it for 10 minutes a day until it seeps into your bones, and then it can be years. But as Irene just pointed out, you can pick up the guitar years later, and it's still there. You can still know how to play it.
Well, the important thing is to pick up that guitar.
Exactly. So that's what I recommend, 10 minutes a day for most people.
All right. Well, Lodro Rinzler is a teacher in the Shambhala Buddhist lineage and founder of the Institute for Compassionate Leadership. His new book is called The Buddha Walks into the Office, A Guide to Livelihood for a New Generation. He'll be speaking about the book tonight at the Brookline Booksmith. You can check out a lot more at RadioBoston.org. Lodro Rinzler, what a pleasure. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
It was really, really fun. Stay with us. Coming up, a Boston Children's Hospital program helps overweight kids harness their strength through rowing. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.